start by saying that my paper today it's not about empirical linkages per se with respect to gender and food crisis in Africa. A lot has been said about the linkages over the past few days and even, I mean, during the course. My paper and a couple of papers presented by Jayoti have thoroughly pursued those linkages between the food crisis and the financial crisis, the issue of climate change as an intervening factor, the linkages of the crisis with the commodity market and so on, and employment linkages in a lot of export-oriented economies. Now, with respect to gender and food security in sub-Saharan Africa, what I am just trying to explore is to what extent do all the symptoms, you know, that seem to be global symptoms, at least in the emerging economies, relevant to the situation in Africa? What makes the situation in Africa peculiar? What makes it necessary to look at other kinds of linkages and solutions to solve the food crisis situation in Africa? With respect to gender in that interface, it seems that there has always been a gender dimension to any food crisis or food security situation in Africa. But women farmers, who are so critical in that interface, end up being at the bottom, you know, at the very bottom of the security, food security ladder. Anytime there is a crisis, women are in a situation of subsistence to drag the economy up from the level of the household, never really been integrated into the export economy or in the employment sector per se. So I'm just trying to look at the series of the typology of food crises that have evolved in most of sub-Saharan Africa, you know, to say whether this food crisis and the symptoms are really new or not. So it's basically about which way forward, you know, in search of solutions in sub-Saharan Africa. Now, I start by, you know, saying that when we talk about food crisis in Africa, which food crisis are we talking about? Is it the chronic one or the current, the acute one? I want to briefly, you know, go through the various types of food crisis that Africa has experienced in the past few decades. The first food crisis, of course, which reared its head in most of the countries, came with the pre and post-colonial policies with respect to agriculture, where export agriculture was encouraged at the expense of food crop production. And that was the start of the first food crisis, when the prices of export crashed in the global world markets. And of course, the result is that food shortages resulted. Farmers shifted, the policies make them, you know, shift massively to export, but then they exited, you know, from exports just as quickly when the prices crashed. Now, the gender dimension of this is that with the colonial policy of export-driven growth, women who traditionally and historically are said to own the whole culture in Africa, who were really the custodian of the food production system, got pushed out of that spectrum. They lost the whole culture. But when the external shocks of the falling global prices came, women came to the rescue. They came back to the whole culture, but at a much more subsistence level. Of course, the second food crisis emerged in several resource-rich African countries. that, you know, had that came with what is known as the Dutch disease, which I'm sure is familiar to a number of people. The oil boom, the resource upsurge in the oil sector led to neglect of the agricultural sector, and farms were abandoned. The agricultural contribution to GDP dropped as low as 10% to 20% in a number of the countries. And of course, the crash in global food prices further led to disincentives in the agri-export sector. There was no incentive to, you know, boost export production. And the oil boom led to inflationary pressure in the food and non-food sector. Now, the oil boom, the result is that there was a further disincentive for large-scale agricultural production and agro-based industrialization. And I say that this was killed from within, you know, from within the countries due to the Dutch disease. Now, gender dimension, women again to the rescue. As men left the farms in droves because agriculture was no longer attractive, women were left in the households. They had to sustain the waning food crop economy, again, through subsistence, because the focus of government expenditure was not on agriculture, so there was hardly any substantial support of the agricultural system. So the third food crisis is the crisis of adjustment, which spread throughout the continent in the 80s and the 90s. And again, as we know from literature, that the liberalization led to, of course, had to be accompanied by exchange rate adjustment. And this led to fall or real crash in real income of export farmers. Export crops were nominally attractive, but with exchange rate adjustment, you know, the real income really crashed in most of the countries. And as a result, agriculture, which, you know, should have been a growth sector with the liberalization, became further constrained as the profitability was highly compromised because of liberalization in the input market. Now, what happened in the food sector? Because of falling real income, farmers had to sell more, which we call that the income quest, to meet food needs. Non-food needs, because inflationary trends were high. And of course, the social adjustment programs that came when the poverty and food security was being highly compromised focused on farm support, some kinds of farm support, farm credit, fertilizer subsidies. But most of these did not reach the real farmers. The story from India, you know, sounded somewhat familiar. There's a lot of it going on in the continent where farm support never reaches the real farmers, but there are middlemen who are reaping the advantage. Now, I would say that with this crisis of liberalization, small-scale and with the macroeconomic framework that was emerging from the IFI, small-scale agriculture became institutionalized. It was like, you know, there is no other way to go but to encourage small-scale agriculture, bring out microcredit, small subsidies that never really transformed the profile of the farms. The other food crisis is random, ongoing. We have man-made and natural disasters, wars and conflicts all over the continent, and each time they bring with them dimensions of crisis where the production, the population is decimated by war, and you have large-scale food shortages. And of course, the gender dimension of this is that women and children bear the brunt of food shortages where production is totally disrupted. We have refugee situation and a lot of dependence on food aid rather than home production, not even support from neighboring countries, because a lot of the neighboring countries were also affected, you know, due to pressure on their own food supply. And of course, with these disasters, with this nature of food crisis, women experience other forms of insecurity, apart from food insecurity, personal insecurity, violence, and so on, which we are familiar with. Climate change, you know, has brought in its wake another form of food crisis, because when a phenomenon is evolving and it is not mitigated, and African countries mostly had no capacity to adapt, any trigger turns it into a crisis. And much more than any of the former forms of crisis, the climate change has been a big trigger for the current food crisis in Africa. There is a gender dimension to that, because retracting farmland, no droughts, declining rainfall, deforestation, degradation, you know, has led to a lot of resource constraint, mainly around land and other natural resources. And as we know, whenever there is a resource struggle, women lose out because of lower bargaining power and low cultural entitlement. HIV/AIDS, I need not elaborate on that. We know that it has also contributed in a way to a crisis of a food supply in a lot of African countries. It's a real and present crisis, which is working even in tandem with the current crisis to exacerbate the total effect on the continent. So the current food crisis is actually a watershed. It is easy to analyze and link the causes to exogenous factors, you know, totally or almost completely external to the production domain in Africa. But one important thing is that it has led to more deterioration in the already an ever-present food insecurity situation on the continent. And the sad thing is that sub-Saharan Africa appears to have no policies of its own to get out of this quagmire. Rather, most of sub-Saharan Africa is still looking to the developed economies for a solution to the crisis. And there have been some responses, both at the global and national levels, which are very much gender blind. You know, the discourse has been almost totally gender blind. But some of these responses have also exacerbated the crisis of high prices, you know, like export restriction. Even some African countries that are net exporters have restricted export, you know, for a period of time. These export bans, export taxes, have rather increased the food price hike, and so the net food importing countries are suffering more as a result. Yeah, 2 minutes? Okay. Yeah, I want to say that a lot of structural weaknesses in the agricultural system in sub-Saharan Africa really need to be addressed before we can move forward. Beyond the immediate responses, we need to look inward and ask ourselves, what does sub-Saharan Africa really have to do differently? Well, I just brought up this graph to show that if you're talking about inflation, food price index, that is the food price index in Nigeria over the same period of time that we're showing the index for global food index. And we can see that there's relative stability in the pattern in Nigeria compared to the global pattern, showing that the variability and the acute phenomenon is at the global level. Rather, at the internal level, the inflationary trend has been going on at a relatively steady and consistent level. So we can say that there is a delink between the sub-Saharan African phenomenon and the global phenomenon. And so the solutions, you know, have to be different in a lot of ways. Of course, gender has been a reinforcing factor. The most important thing I would say is that as far as women farmers are concerned, subsistence and microcredit trap has been the mantra. And I think that more than elevate gender concerns to a level of macroeconomic relevance, it is, you know, relegating gender concerns to a micro, almost a level of poverty. I always say that gender never gets past goal one of the MDGs. It's about hunger and food insecurity. And I think this is very wrong, given the important role of women in African agriculture. Now, Of course, there a lot of information about how women are coping. I will not go into that. But I will just mention that there are other forms of coping strategies that are even more demeaning that are coming up among women. Some of them are increasing the incidence of destitution and begging in the streets of a lot of African cities where food is in relative abundance, at least at the primary level. You find women begging, openly begging. Of course, prostitution is another factor that is being almost accepted, even among the educated families. And MDG goals are being highly compromised. You keep seeing new faces of destitution among women. Now, yes, I said what needs to change. There are opportunities and there are threats. But the major opportunity is that the whole macroeconomic framework for growth of the agricultural sector in the region has to change, and there are challenges. Of course, the current crisis presents opportunity for African countries that have the potential, that have the comparative advantage to rapidly take advantage of the price hike and increase supply. This will require a lot of strategic moves, quick and rapid infusion of capital into the sector. Well, you can see from where, because the export revenue of a lot of these countries have declined. But some of them have still been able to maintain trade surpluses in spite of the crisis. So some countries really do have the comparative advantage to increase production rapidly in the short run and try and capture a market and begin to build revenue for long-term growth. There are opportunities for cash inflow from the Bretton Woods institutions. I mentioned the economic, the external shock facility. That is a facility that has not been explored by any of the countries so far, and this crisis qualifies as external shock for most of the countries. Now, these funds, you can say that it reinforces debt burden, but in the short to medium term, these funds can be used to relieve the public expenditure, public revenue constraint, because the funds are tied mainly to human development strategies and can progress the MDGs, while the public revenue can be rediverted to large-scale agriculture. I also want to say in terms of the link that not all the countries, in fact, a lot of the countries are not experiencing the financial crisis impact as we have been talking about it. In a number of countries, the financial sector has actually grown following financial sector deregulation. And I want to say that, for instance, in Nigeria, the banking sector is providing the highest proportion of employment for graduates, girls that have tertiary education. And it is booming the middle class. It is actually bringing back a middle class that has been eroded by poverty in the past couple of decades. And tangentially, I would say that the booming middle class, the newly evolving middle class, presents employment opportunities for a lot of women in the peri-urban and peri-urban areas. Now, the responses, the macroeconomic responses and changes need to be engendered. And it means that women farmers must move from subsistence to commercial production. How this will be done, there are also a lot of challenges which I've pointed to. The biggest of the challenges is access to large parcels of land, because their lands have become increasingly small and fragmented over all the other crises. So what strategy can bring women farmers in possession of large parcels of land? And we find that the group mechanism has worked a lot. Where government land distribution schemes are in place, group mechanism has worked in favor of women. This group mechanism can be used to foster their access to critical inputs and also be used to develop their skills in the downstream sector of production and of marketing. Well, of course, we're talking that about some responses that appear to be positive. Now, the school feeding program has gained ground in a lot of African countries. It is part of the NEPAD initiative, and it is actually promoting the enrollment of girls and affecting positively the nutritional status of families. I want to highlight some peculiar growth areas, growth opportunities for women farmers. There is growth in the tourism sector in Africa, but of course we must warn that most of the tourism demand is from prosperous nations of the developed world who are currently experiencing downturn. So the tourism sector is likely to be, the growth rate may not be as rapid as we envisage, but there has been incidences of high linkage between agricultural sector and the tourism sector, where the demand in hotels for exotic vegetables and fruits is booming the agricultural sector. And women in several of these countries are at the forefront of this. Of course, there are opportunities in peri-urban agriculture, where land is a big constraint, and it is in a lot of cases. Peri-urban agriculture, high-value agriculture, is an area that women farmers can be made to explore, especially when they have their group mechanism behind them. Well, there are many other opportunities that can be explored, but the point that I'm making in this presentation is that the strategies really have to change radically, and that in a situation of the kind of change that is envisaged, there will be winners, there will be losers. If the strategies, if the process is managed efficiently, we may find women farmers being at the end of the day some of the biggest gainers in the process. But we must not overlook the fact that if we want to run away from the losses, we will never do anything. There will be short-term losses, but those short-term losses can be recouped when agriculture becomes the pivot of growth, of industrial growth in the region, and it can very much be so. Lastly, I want to say that Africa has to explore the opportunity of interdependence rather than a dependency. There are food surplus regions and there are food scarce regions. Interregional trade can be very well projected and encouraged more than is being done. The monetary unions are forming up. When the monetary unions come into existence, it's going to increase the flow of goods between the countries, and this can be positively reinforcing for the whole region and reduce the dependence on developed economies. And of course, the tendency for shocks that reverberate from developed economies. Thank you very much.